It's the third hour of First Up here on this Friday morning. Carolnik and Koliakovo with you. It's All Request Friday. Of course, Start Me Up by the Stones, a request from Morocco sent to 1050.
Hey, Rocco!
Rocco loves it. Loves the Stones. How could you not? This is one of the classic songs basically ever. If you don't like Start Me Up, I don't know what you got going on, but you know, we don't need to be started up. I guess that's a pretty bad segue. Man, even 20 Fingers is rolling his eyes here. I was trying my
best. Not the best.
I was trying. Not the best, Louis Domingue. But
I thought it was good. I thought.
Thank you very much. You're a supportive teammate, unlike 20 Fingers, who just rolls his eyes anytime I make a questionable segue. But it's pretty easy to note that the Toronto Maple Leafs started out hot, finished out hot last night. They win 5-0 over the LA Kings, and we've been talking about it all morning, Coco. A truly complete effort from the blue and white. A team that's been on a ridiculous tear of late. Since November 1st, the second best record in the National Hockey League. They have a 13-game point streak right now, and the franchise record is within sight. And I wonder if that's a conversation they're having in the room, because obviously they're talking about Marner, the 21-game point streak, but the Toronto Maple Leafs, a franchise that's been in existence for 105 years, whatever it is, the longest point streak they've ever recorded as a team happened in 2003, 2004, 16 games. Just three away now. Calgary, a team coming to town tomorrow night. They play tonight in Columbus, so they'll be road weary, second half of a back-to-back, so the Leafs are in a good spot tomorrow against a Flames team that's been pretty up and down all year long as well.
Yeah, no, they put themselves in a really good position. Obviously, just in our conversation with Darren Dreger, and if you missed it, you can check it out on the podcast. We talked about, you know, potential guys that the Maple Leafs will be missing in their next couple games. Definitely didn't Nick Robertson, maybe Pierre Engvall, so who slots in for those two guys? I don't even think it matters, you know, who's thoughts in, because clearly this team doesn't get fazed by who's in or who's out with the lineup changes, because they have the right guys driving the bus right now. And the guy who is at the front of the wheel driving the bus is Mitch Marner. And what an incredible streak that he has created for himself, and you know, the excitement around his game and the league, 21 games right now, and just the way he's doing it on a nightly basis, it's been so impressive to watch, and it really makes you appreciate even more how great of a player he is and how lucky the Maple Leafs are to have him on their team.
The way he scored last night, I mean, the slap shot after falling behind the net, trying to set up John Tavares,
Magic
and the puck
Mitch,
comes
buddy.
Around.
Magic
Mitch. So let's hear Auston Matthews, a man who has scored many beautiful goals in his NHL career, describe his buddy Mitch Marner and the way he scored last night.
It's a nice clap bomb he had there. yeah, I mean, I didn't know he could shoot the puck like that. So hopefully we'll keep seeing that. And yeah, he's just, it's so impressive. It's so much fun just watching him do his thing out there. He's having a lot of fun and just, you know, it makes everybody around him better. So it's been a lot of fun to witness this. And, you know, we just want him to keep going. And I know he will.
You can hear how loose and free the Maple Leafs are just by the way they're talking to the media right now. A nice clap bomb.
Yeah.
I love that term. And
better
that
than
was
better
a clap
than
bomb.
Better than the interview that Tage Thompson he had after his 5-goal performance.
Yeah,
it's like,
it was,
dude,
it
you
was
just
all
scored
right.
5 goals and your team won, scored 9 goals. It's like, it's dude, man, lighten up a bit. And, and this is what you should be doing. This is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for us as fans to watch, and it's even more fun for the players to play in. I mean, think about I can tell you what it's like going to the rink every day, being part of something like this. It's fun. You want to be there. You never want to leave. You enjoy being around the guys. You're happy for other people's success, because other people's success usually leads to team success, which is what this team has prioritized throughout this whole stretch.
Yeah, and it was an awesome environment down there. And we'll get to Justin Bieber being in the crowd in just a second. Rocking the jacket, rocking the glasses. But Auston Matthews addressed how the crowd last night down at Scotiabank Arena kind of helped turn the tide for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I definitely kind of got some energy in the crowd, and then obviously a couple quick goals, and we're able to kind of get them back on their heels. So, I mean, those are kind of little things that happened throughout the game that, I mean, that was kind of a big one, but, you know, things that just happened throughout the game that make a small difference, but they go a long way.
And so what I think Matthews is referring to, and I think he's a guy that should be getting a lot of praise this morning, who we haven't talked about much, is Zach Aston-Reese. right? He's the guy that got the team belt last night for player of the game, and rightfully so, because there was a point in the game where, you know, you're watching it, it's 0-0, there's not much going on. This guy drops the mitts, he gets the crowd on their feet, he gets the energy going on the bench, the boys are lifted, and next thing you know, right after that fight, they score three kick goals in a minute and six seconds, and the game's turned into their favor. They've got the energy going, they got the crowd on their back, and clearly a pivotal moment in the game that turned out to be, you know, a turning point for the Maple Leafs in creating the energy they couldn't find in that game.
It's
so
amazing.
Shout out to Zach Aston-Reese.
It is amazing to think that we've talked a lot about Marner and just how the team is playing as a whole, the three goals in a minute and 6 seconds, and the team's goaltending is almost an afterthought in spite of being the most consistent and surprising aspect of this entire season.
You know why, AK? You know why? Because for the longest time, it hasn't really mattered who's in the net. It's what you've come to expect out of the position. We're out of the position right now between Murray, between Samsonov, between Shulgren. You've gotten great goaltending.
Let's be honest here. Samsonov, it wasn't the stiffest of tests. I mean, Matt Murray's performance on Tuesday night, it was a different animal that they faced in the Dallas Stars than the, I don't know, what you described, the lackadaisical performance of the LA Kings last night. I think that might be a fair description. So the high danger opportunity.
Lackluster
for the Kings.
Probably.
Lackluster.
Yeah.
Is it lackadaisical or lackadaisical? I'm not sure, but we'll look that up.
It's lackadaisical.
Cheese, why don't you look into that? We'll get an answer on that subject. But yeah, the performance of the team's goaltending, again, it's back-to-back shutouts. Murray on Tuesday, Samsonov last night. Here's Sheldon Keefe talking about just that. Sheldon Keefe talking about the Maple Leafs goaltending.
Felt good about our goaltending for a long time now, but obviously two shutouts. That's what you're looking for, right? I mean, you want to have a clean sheet. You want to be perfect in that way. Everybody leaves feeling great. And you know, we chatted at length this morning just about how connected we've been. You know, our defensive really stepped up and made some great defensive plays and they responded well to adversity. Forwards have done an incredible job of just getting us connected as a five-man group. And then the goaltending is outstanding. It just gives us such confidence. Okay, we didn't give up a lot tonight, but, you know, Sammy looked like if we did that we were going to be fine. So it was great.
And mostly in particular in the, you know, near the end of the first period where LA had some great chances to get on the board early and Samsonov shut the door and allowed this team to find their legs in the second period. And clearly when they did, all it took was a minute and 6 seconds for them to completely turn the game into their favor. And I love what Sheldon Keefe said about using the word connected, because it's the most appropriate word to use when talking about this Maple Leafs team and the way they're playing. They are playing very connected. You know, you're connecting your goaltending to your defense to your forward, and then your whole group together, one, is being connected, playing as a five-man unit, six-man unit if you want to include the goaltender. So, you know, credit to Sheldon Keefe, like, because this is a guy, too, that, you know, had a plan in place going into this week. Murray, Samsonov. Some coaches sometimes can go against that depending on how the goalie plays in the first game. You could have easily said, if you're Sheldon Keefe, well, he got a shutout, he played really well, he stole the game for us, he deserves to get the next game, but he stuck to the plan. And by sticking to the plan, all it's done is create, or is it, it's injected even more confidence into this group, especially into Samsonov, because what did he do? He went out and made his coach accountable for his decision by saying, you made the right choice sticking with me because I gave you the performance that you needed at that position for that game.
Probably a safe bet that Murray goes tomorrow night against Calgary,
yes.
And then Samsonov starts against the Anaheim Ducks, and then Murray starts against the Rangers, and then Samsonov starts against the former team in the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll necessarily go 1-1-1-1. I think if you're trying to identify Murray as your number one, maybe you want to go two games and then one game. Like you probably want to focus on getting in Samsonov at least one game a week while Murray is playing this hot until, you know, I wouldn't say until he falls off because that's not what you hope, but
here's the thing, though. Samsonov's numbers are just as good, if not better, than Matt Murray's. I mean, I think they're equivalent. Like, look at, Samsonov is a 933 save percentage. Murray is a 932. Samsonov's goals against is 1.88. Murray, 234. But you subtract that first game against Montreal, Murray's probably in the low twos, if not high ones. I mean, it's been unbelievable to see the performance that these guys are getting from two goaltenders who are huge question marks heading into the season. I mean, it's been a huge surprise and a very pleasant one for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So shout out to the goaltending, no doubt. Shout out to Mitch Marner, number 21 as far as the point streak goes. And the Toronto Maple Leafs keep the good times rolling in a 5-0 win over the LA Kings. We'll look ahead to some World Cup action on the other side with TSN host Kelsey Braid. And I know he's got some thoughts on the Bieber outfit and which of you and I have the better chance of pulling that off. The answer is you, by the way. Dregs made the point about your golf swag. And it is very colorful. You at least have some experience rocking the colorful swag. I got, you know, the black golf shirt, the white golf shirt.
Yeah, but that's on the golf course. It's not out at a public event.
Dude, you play enough golf, it may as well be a public event. I mean, you're always out there. 24/7, 365.
I miss golf, man.
We wish. Oh. Yeah, I miss golf so much. You have no idea.
So,
I cannot wait to tee it up.
I showed you in my office how I'm planning to set up with some things that I'm planning to hang up. This company called Wood Jerseys makes these unbelievable wooden engraved NHL hockey jerseys. So instead of hanging up my real jerseys, I've basically got all the teams that I've played on, five teams, and I had them make me the Blues, the Maple Leafs, the Red Wings, the Flyers, and the Sabres, and I'm going to hang them up in my office. But what I also have in my office that I stare at every day is my golf clubs. I stare at my golf clubs every day, and I'm like, I would love to play golf.
I might have to go visit our boy Elliot at Golf Town and see what's going on there. That could be something that I'm looking at in the coming days, for sure. Yeah. Kelsey Braid, someone who we'll be talking to on the other side, plus Aaron Schatz. We'll talk some NFL. What a night for Baker Mayfield and the Rams upsetting the Raiders in a stunning fourth quarter comeback. All that coming up in Hour 3 next. This is All Request Friday here on First Up. You're listening to TSN 1050. We're big fans of our next guest, one of the hosts of World Cup coverage here at TSN. And this is his request. It's called Jungle by Fred Again. And to be honest, him joining the show was my request. So a couple of requests fulfilled. It's Kelsey Braid, our good buddy. What's going on, man? How are you?
Good, boys. I'm doing well. After a couple days of just laying low after the round of 16, it's time to get going again with the quarterfinals. So pretty jacked up. It was a good break before all this drama unfolds over the next 2 days.
Yeah, it starts at 10 a.m. here on TSN, TSN 1050, Croatia and Brazil. Before we get to the football, Kelsey, I know you were tweeting about Bieber's jacket. It had a little bit of a Care Bears feel to it. Do you think this is something that you could pull off on, you know, a TSN panel of sorts at some point in the future?
Definitely not. maybe toning down the jacket a bit, but I'd have to lose the glasses. Like the glasses were a bit much last night. I was at the game and seated across from him in the lower bowl.
Really?
And my buddy and I spotted him early on. We're like, who is this character? And then all of a sudden, like 5 or 6 minutes later, all of a sudden it's up on the Jumbotron. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Because no one else would have the audacity to try and rock that. And I love how they... social media stuff, they kind of like crop out Haley. But Haley, his wife, is just wearing like a nice traditional brown winter jacket or like a pea coat. So, but nothing could nothing could stop people from just staring at that for most of the game after he was spotted on the Jumbotron.
My personal preference would be if they cropped out Justin and just kept Haley. That's kind of how I would operate, but I don't know. I guess Justin Bieber, a little bit of a bigger celebrity, and he is buddies with Matthews and many of the Maple Leafs. So, Kelsey, let's talk about what starts at 10 a.m. It's Croatia and Brazil, and we know Croatia was in Canada's group. We saw them. That was a tough result for Canada, no doubt, a couple of weeks ago. The Brazilian team is a massive favorite over Croatia, who, you know, we know about their midfield. A lot has been made about that. You think Brazil just takes care of business without much fanfare today, Kelsey?
It'll be interesting to see, because, I mean, like, Croatia, other than their win against Canada, which Canada had to try and open up and go for the result in that one, Croatia, as far as an attack goes, hasn't been that interesting to watch. Like, they're good at shutting down teams. But you look at Brazil and just what they did in their round of 16, racking up the goals, dancing with the coach, like all that sort of stuff. I don't think Croatia has faced that type of attack yet in this tournament. And that's the beauty about this stage of the tournament right now. Like, there's eight teams left. Outside of Morocco, the other seven, you could make a very strong argument as to why they're there and should be there and are deserving to be there. And Morocco is just as well, but they're just not one of the traditional powerhouses. But I look at today, and it's unless Croatia's midfield is able to completely nullify and they drop to a perhaps more of a lower block, like, I don't see how Brazil doesn't win the game this morning. Like, that's kind of the way I look at it right now. Is Croatia, yes, they've had a great run, but this Brazilian team, the depth on this team, the fact that Neymar doesn't have to be relied upon as heavily, and they've got other guys, names, like, their entire starting 11 could start on any of the big clubs in the world. We know that. And even the next guys up, even though they lost their final group stage game, those guys are stars on their team as well. So, I mean, like, the depth of this team, it's just, I don't see how anyone can kind of even take down Brazil. They were my pick pre-tournament to win the World Cup, or at least give a good go at it, and I still stay that way.
Yeah, they've been super impressive. I mean, just the way they, it's like the art that they play football with. I can't believe I said football. I called it football. It's soccer to me.
Love it.
Yeah, it's impressive. And I'm with you, man. Like, to me, other than the Canada game with Croatia, they've been very, unimpressive, and I don't like their chances today against Brazil. But let's look forward to the other match. Go ahead.
By design, though, like that's Croatia's style by design. They don't have that feared goal scorer that they had in Mario Mandzukic back in the day. Like, they don't have that at this tournament. They can score goals, but just not at the same regularity or that same threat of scoring. But yeah, mm-hmm. No, I agree with you.
Well, the other game on the board today at 2 o'clock will be Argentina versus Netherlands. And Netherlands is one of those teams, you know, they had an easy division to get through.
Yep.
They had a very impressive win against USA. Like, what are we supposed to make of this team? Are they a real threat to beat Argentina, or is this a game that you expect Argentina to cruise through as well?
I think this one will be a little tougher to get through for Argentina. The way I look at it is, we've seen this Argentina team in past years just kind of crumble when it gets to these stages of the tournament under Lionel Messi. And the pressure is just so immense on them. Like, I think it's, if they're able to escape the pressure in the sense that they don't weigh themselves down by it going into this match, I don't see how Argentina does not win this game. Like you mentioned, like, the Netherlands game at this point is a nice story. They're on the rebound as far as young, strong players like Cody Gakpo and others on that squad. But I just don't see with what Argentina is and what Netherlands is. Netherlands isn't reached that stage for me yet where I would fear them. They're a solid team. They're a strong team. I'm going to have my Dutch friends come after me after this interview, but at the same time, I just don't see... I don't think they're the team that denies Lionel Messi from playing his last World Cup game. Like, that's the way I kind of look at that one. Like, if we reach that stage with both Messi and Luka Modric and Cristiano Ronaldo, guys that we know that are likely in the last World Cups for them, and I just don't see the Netherlands being the team to knock out Messi at this point.
Our buddy Kelsey Braid, our guest here on First Up, he is one of the hosts for the FIFA World Cup on TSN. The action gets underway at 10 a.m., Croatia and Brazil. 2 o'clock today, Netherlands and Argentina. But 2 o'clock tomorrow, Kelsey, a game I am so fired for, England and France. I mean, the star power is immense between these two sides. Two soccer superpowers, football superpowers, if you will. How do you see that one shaking out tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Like, you think about it, what England has done in this tournament and just how they've been able to rebound mentally from the Euros last year and losing on penalties. You look at the young guys and how they've rebounded so well and how this isn't Harry Kane's a huge part of their attack, but this isn't a Harry Kane-led team. This team is being thrusted forward by the star power of its younger players, and it's so entertaining to watch. That said, you look at what France has had to go through before the tournament even started with losing star striker, star midfielder. Like, but yet, they're fine. They're still rolling. They still got Kylian Mbappe. They still have a strong midfield. They still have a strong back line. I think this one is this is where England always does people dirty, because they give you hope for so long in a tournament. Yeah. And then it's all of a sudden like, oh, yeah, that 56 years of, like, pent-up frustration, oh, it's probably going to continue for at least another 40 years. But what they did to get to this point is just phenomenal. But I just France, to me, has shown enough that they're worthy combatants to get back to a World Cup final. And I don't see how England is able to do that. That being said, of the games, that is, like, for me, the one where I'm completely tossed up and undecided and torn on, that's the match of the quarterfinals, that it could go either way. But you just look at France, the resiliency that they've shown. For me, that kind of wins the day, because they've gone through the thick of it, and different type of resiliency that England has gone through, just with the mental games of last year and just always petering out at the wrong time at these major tournaments. Maybe one of these years they just get it right, and it could start tomorrow against France. Because for England, many of these teams, the real tournament does start today and tomorrow, now that they've gotten to the quarterfinals, because this is where they're expected to be. Anything less than World Cup glory for most of these teams is absolute failure.
Yeah, no, it really is. In France, man, Mbappe, the goals that he scored last game, oh my God.
I know.
It's just, it was incredible. But I got to ask you, Kelsey, we've seen a lot of the favorites, find their way through in the knockout stages, minus Morocco, who upset Spain. Yeah. But I don't even look at Morocco as an underdog right now, because of how much of an advantage they have with their games that they play in, because the environments in those games is just incredibly hostile. Does Morocco have a chance to beat a Portugal team that just looked to play even more inspired without Ronaldo in the lineup?
Yeah, and that's a good question too. Like, many were wondering how would Portugal show up for their last match, and they score 6 goals, and Ramos comes off the bench for his first ever World Cup start and has a hat-trick. Like, you pushed Ronaldo to his side, and the Portuguese Federation has had to come out and defend Ronaldo, saying he wasn't going to leave the team because he was benched and all the other drama there. But you look at this Moroccan side, like, that's the beauty of the way that the draw set up, because Morocco won their group. Like, Morocco and Portugal have a chance. One of them is going to be playing in the semifinals, and I don't think most people had either even reaching definitely not Morocco reaching the quarterfinal stage, and Portugal maybe not reaching the semifinal stage. But you look at those two teams, one of those teams is going to be a semifinalist when it's all said and done this weekend. But you look at the way that Morocco plays, I don't know how much longer they can continue at that high press, that high intensity, and the low block that they play as well, of inviting teams to come at them. Because the risk reward on that, at some point it's going to bite you. And does Morocco actually have goals in them to, if they do go down, to fight back in a match? They have some incredible talent. I think many people were hoping that Canada was the dark horse in that group, but Morocco proved over and over again that they were actually the biggest dark horse, or one of the biggest dark horses in this entire tournament.
You can watch all the action starting at 10 a.m. on TSN. Listen to it here on TSN 1050. Our guy Kelsey Braid will be spearheading the coverage. Move over, Duthie. It's Kelsey Braid's time to shine. Thanks for doing this, man.
I appreciate it, buddy. Yeah, Duthie's spot is safe, as is Luke Wildman. So I'll be couching it with you boys later today, just wherever we're at watching these games. It'll be a lot of fun, though.
Sounds good to me. Thanks, man. That's Kelsey Braid from TSN, one of the hosts of the FIFA World Cup here on TSN. We'll look ahead to a big weekend in the NFL. I mean, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty when it comes to the playoff picture. We'll talk to Aaron Schatz. He's coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll also look back on a crazy game last night that saw Baker Mayfield, who was claimed on waivers just 2 days prior, lead the Rams to a stunning win over the Raiders. All Request Friday continues here on First Up. This is TSN 1050. This is All Request Friday here on First Up. Not a song you traditionally hear played by 20 Fingers. This is Still Tippin' by Mike Jones, featuring Slim Thug and Paul Wall. Scott from Hamilton's request. Carlo, are you a fan of Slim Thug?
I have no idea who that is.
Diminutive Thug. That's what I like to call him, after Darren Drager called me diminutive. So shout out to Scott from Hamilton.
There's more diminutive Thug. stature.
Okay. All right, Chrissy.
How did he have that cue?
I don't think that's an insult by Darren Dreger, by the way. I think he's just pointing out. I'm like a 5 foot, 8 and a half Jewish dude. I mean, you know, I'm not. Yeah. You know, I'm not a barbarian here. I'm not Jason Momoa right here. So, you know, I guess diminutive is an appropriate description of my physique. But, you know, it is what it is. We'll talk to Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders, the creator of DVOA, a kind of a metric, Coco, that tracks how a team really performs, an analytic of sorts when it comes to the NFL. You know who the number one team is in DVOA, according to Aaron Schatz?
No.
The Buffalo Bills.
Really?
That's good news for you. He's a big-time believer in the Bills. You wonder how Von Miller's absence for the rest of the season will affect that, but we'll ask Aaron in about 10 minutes' time, and we'll get into Baker Mayfield's epic comeback, leading the Rams after starting the game on the bench to a 17-16 win over the Raiders that essentially ends the Raiders' chances to make the playoffs. And honestly, the way they played in the second half, they deserve to have their season ended. And Josh McDaniels, why don't we cue up the clip of Josh McDaniels, the coach of the Raiders, Chrissy, where, oh man, he probably wasn't feeling too good about that loss. And he explained what the Raiders need to do to get back on track.
The bottom line is, until we figure out how to, you know, stop losing games with mistakes that we, you know, we do ourselves, then it makes it very difficult to win. So, you know, you can't really win until you stop from losing, and that's penalties, turnovers, things like that that contribute to that.
We must figure out how to stop losing games. That's some really brilliant analysis from Josh McDaniels. Yeah. But
how about coaching? How about better play calling? You've lost four times this year when you had more than a 13-point lead in the second half. Yeah, I get that's players and some of their, you know, maybe dumb penalties that they take or questionable plays that they make. But a lot of it is questionable play calling, too. You had a chance to ice the game yesterday by just getting 1 yard on third down when you have possession and the clock gets run out. Instead, you run a horrible play. And J.J. Watt, there was a tweet that he said commenting on, remember the TCU game on the weekend where they had their quarterback, what's his name? He's a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Duggan,
yes. Duggar, or Duggan. It's Duggar, I think.
I think it's Duggan, but yes.
You know, on the last drive of the game, he literally ran the ball the whole way down the field. They get to the 1 yard line, and they handed it to their running back three straight times and didn't get in. And J.J. Watt basically said, he goes, the hardest play to defend in football is a 1 yard QB sneak. It, like, he doesn't understand why you run the ball back 5 yards to run back forward 6 yards to get 1 yard. It's the same thing yesterday. You had 1 yard to ice the game, and you hand it off to the team. The defense knows what you're going to do. Sneak the ball, get the push through, get the 1 yard to ice. The game is over. That's coaching.
Tom Brady has executed the QB sneak to perfection for 20 years. One of the most successful in that respect. Probably Josh McDaniels would know that, having been with the Patriots for many years, but I guess for whatever reason, they decided to opt for a different decision, and that ultimately cost them the game. Again, we'll talk to Aaron Schatz about that in just a minute, but a couple big signings again in Major League Baseball, none of which feature the Toronto Blue Jays' Brandon Nimmo, who was reportedly of significant interest to the Toronto Blue Jays. He signs an 8-year deal worth $162 million to go back to the Mets. To go back to the Mets, too, who also signed David Robertson. The Mets are spending a fortune. They are wheeling and dealing. And what you're missing, I think what everybody, at least who covers and watches the Toronto Blue Jays, is any type of activity whatsoever. And again, there's lots of players still out there as far as free agency goes. Trades can be made. But to say it's been an uninspiring start to the offseason for the Blue Jays would be very appropriate. Of course, the Teoscar Hernandez trade to Seattle was one move they made. But let's go. Let's get moving and shaking here. Let's bring in some guys and get some intrigue going with the Blue Jays. They will. I mean, it's not like they're going to go the entire offseason without bringing in an outfielder and without bringing in a starting pitcher, probably a couple of relievers as well. But it has been curious to see how quiet it's been.
Very. Very quiet and very curious, considering all the names that we thought the Blue Jays would be in contention, you know, with or for when it comes to free agents. And right now, apparently it was said yesterday that the Blue Jays have left San Diego and the winter meetings without anything done. And is it a bad thing? No, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
We don't know.
But I mean, you're very, you know, you're sitting on pins and needles here, waiting for the Blue Jays to do something, because all the talk going in, I mean, they've made the biggest splash so far when it comes to trades in the offseason by starting, you know, with the trade of Teoscar Hernandez to Seattle, thinking that, okay, this was probably a move that was going to, you know, allow another move to happen.
Like a domino effect, yeah.
Yeah, like a domino effect, and we haven't seen anything happen. Now, considering all the names that are coming off of the free agent market, maybe that's a good thing. You don't want to overspend on you know, the top guys. Maybe you can find value at some of the middle tier guys, or maybe you find more value in the trade market, which is, I think, you know, maybe a better route for the Blue Jays to explore, because it just doesn't seem like many free agents that are out there, regardless if the Blue Jays like them, are interested in coming to Toronto. And we saw Alek Manoah step out yesterday on social media, get ahead of it and say, you know, why all this trash talk about, you know, people coming to Toronto? People should feel a lot of pride coming to Toronto because you're a team that represents Canada. It's what I love. You know, it's what I, you know, have a lot of passion for. And that's what really you should focus on. And good for him to doing that, because he's probably hearing the same things about people don't want to come play for Toronto because they play in Canada.
Well, I mean, we don't know that to be the case, and we just...
Again, it's like you're right. It's speculation that's out there.
Pure speculation, and maybe the Jays weren't willing to go to 8 years for Brandon Nimmo.
Nor should they.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think Brandon Nimmo would have loved to come to Toronto for an 8-year, $170 million deal. Or Verlander, you guarantee him that third year, you pay him $50 million. I think he's a Toronto Blue Jay right now, but the Jays have been somewhat frugal with their spending, at least at this point. I think that's a good call, because if you're overspending and signing these guys who are not deserving of these massive contracts that they're receiving, I think you're putting yourself in a bad spot. So we'll see how it goes. I'm sure Monday when we reconvene on this program, there will be some news with the Jays. You hope so. Anyway, some significant news in the NFL last night. Baker Mayfield plays just days after he is acquired off waivers by the Rams, and he does indeed pull a Tom Brady. We'll talk to Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders about that and figure out why he is so infatuated with the Buffalo Bills and their chances to win the Super Bowl. That's next with Quentin Richardson, longtime NBAer, one of my favorites. He's up in 15 minutes. More First Up as we continue on this Friday morning. This is TSN 1050.
23 remaining, 15 seconds. Mayfield flings it, left side, end zone. Caught! Caught by Van Jefferson! With 9 seconds remaining, touchdown, LA!
20 fingers. Oh, my God, with the Burning Heart song going in the background? I'm jacked right now, dude.
Yeah, so the song is Burning Hearts by Survivor, a request from Greg from Georgetown here on All Request Friday. This is First Up on TSN 1050. Baker Mayfield, a survivor of sorts as well, claimed off waivers by the LA Rams. Nobody really expected it would be a remote possibility that he starts. Well, he didn't start the game for the LA Rams. Comes in after the first series and somehow, some way, leads the Rams to victory over the Raiders. You heard the call on the Rams radio network. Time to welcome in Aaron Schatz, the editor-in-chief of Football Outsiders. Aaron, how surprised were you? And I think the answer is pretty obvious, that Baker Mayfield led the Rams to victory last night.
Oh, I was not surprised at all. I expected this the whole time. No, of course I was completely surprised. Nobody expected that a guy could come in with 2 days of practice and lead a 98-yard drive in 2 minutes with no timeouts. I mean, come on.
I mean, I almost think the bigger story here, like Mayfield, it's a fairy tale almost, but the way the Raiders blew that game and have blown so many big leads in the second half, Carlo and I were discussing it earlier, Aaron, how this is the fourth time they've blown a 13-point lead in the second half. Do you attribute that to coaching? Do you attribute that to just, I don't even know what you attribute it to. Please explain your thoughts.
I know the narrative is that it's coaching. It's hard to know how much is of coaching you know, for example, the really bad penalty where Jerry Tillery knocked the ball out of that guy's hand.
Idiot.
Cost him 15 yards. Tillery has only been in Vegas for a couple of weeks, right? So how do you blame McDaniels for the fact that Tillery did something stupid when Tillery hasn't even been there very long? Like, is that McDaniels' fault? I mean, what is McDaniels' fault is they punted on 4th and 1.
Yes.
They had 4th and 1 near midfield, and instead of going for it, they had 3rd and 1, and they ran this kind of hurried up, bad fullback give, and then they had 4th and 1, and instead of going for it, they punted. And, like, we talk about it all the time, like, going for it on 4th and 1 at midfield, you are more likely to win the game than punting the ball. And this was an example.
So we talk about McDaniels. There was a stat released today about the Raiders' season. That was their 4th loss when holding a 13-point lead. Like, is McDaniels' job on the line right now? Do you think he's a guy that could be replaced at the end of the season?
How much money does Mark Davis have to pay coaches over and over? He's not one of the richer NFL owners. I know we like to think of these guys as all being super-duper rich, but he's not in the same category with, like, David Tepper and Dan Snyder. Like, how many coaches can the dude hire?
Yeah. Wow. He's probably stuck with this one for a while.
it seems that way. And my theory, Aaron, is that they're going to find a way to bring in Tom Brady next year, the McDaniels-Brady connection, and send Derek Carr packing. And it's amazing. Derek Carr was playing pretty well the last couple of weeks, and then, man, what a stinker from him. Let's talk about the DVOA ratings that you have on Football Insiders, a metric that you've created that kind of measures who you think is the real best team, kind of value above average of sorts when it comes to the National Football League. I was kind of surprised when researching your appearance this morning that the Buffalo Bills are number one on your rankings. How much does the loss of Von Miller affect how deep you think the Bills can go this season? They host the Jets on Sunday.
It hurts them because we need to get past Kansas City. To get past Kansas City, we need to be able to rush Patrick Mahomes with just 4 guys. If we're going to rush Patrick Mahomes with just 4 guys, we need the best 4 guys we can get. And so losing Von Miller is definitely a problem when it comes to the playoffs. I don't think it hurts them that much, though, on their way to the playoffs. I still think they're the favorite for the number one seed in the AFC. I still think they're the best team in the AFC at this point, even without Von Miller. But Kansas City is a particular matchup where they really needed him.
Mm-hmm. And they also really need home field advantage against Kansas City because clearly they showed they've, you know, going into KC and winning again could be challenging for themselves. Looking across the board this weekend, there's some very favorable matchups, but you know, you saw the game on Monday night with Tampa Bay, and me and my co-host here, Aaron Karolnik, have a debate about Tampa Bay and how they could potentially project the rest of the season here. I'm on Tampa Bay's side just because as long as they have Tom Brady, I don't know how you could bet against them. But how do you think Tampa Bay favors throughout the rest of the season? How challenging or how much of a threat could they be come playoff time?
Yeah, they're better than their record. Like, they're number 11 in our numbers right now. They have a top 10 defense. And believe it or not, they have a top 10 passing game. They are
not.
Oh,
come on.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
and you questioned it on Monday night, and you questioned it, and you questioned it, and then they came back at the end of that game, and they showed you that they can pass the ball. They're terrible. Absolutely awful at running the ball. The reason why I say they have a top 10 passing game is that we compare plays to a baseline based on the down and distance. And Brady is constantly in terrible down and distance situations because the running game goes out and gets 1 yard on first down. Well, that's not the passing game's fault. So, I mean, Tampa Bay overall is a better team than their record. They can make some noise, but I don't see them getting past Dallas or Philadelphia. Those are the two best teams in the NFC.
Our guest is Aaron Schatz. He's the editor-in-chief of Football Outsiders. Coincidentally, Aaron, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the San Francisco 49ers this weekend, and San Fran's got a new quarterback, Brock Purdy, under center. Obviously, it's a drop-off from Jimmy Garoppolo. We don't really know necessarily what Brock Purdy is or what he could be come playoff time, but do you think the loss of Jimmy G, assuming he's actually done for the year, does that remove San Fran from your list of contenders in the NFC?
No, but it drops them, I think, significantly. I know we all want to believe Jimmy G is this totally replaceable hack, but the fact is, like, they've been much better with him at quarterback than any of the backups.
Yeah, and that's the evidence is there to back it up. You know, I mean,
yeah, I mean, the numbers are just much better with Garoppolo than with Mullins or Beathard or even Trey Lance. And Purdy, I mean, Purdy's passing numbers were like a little bit below average last week, which is much better than what you would expect from a seventh-round rookie, but not as good as Garoppolo.
So you mentioned the teams in the NFC. You know, I'm a believer in the Bucs just because Brady's there. They're going to host a home game. You know how NFL playoffs work with games that are played at home. You talked about the Cowboys. You talked about the Eagles. But a team that you haven't mentioned, it's one of the top teams in the NFC right now, is the Minnesota Vikings. What does your DVOA system say about the Vikings? Because there's people that are calling them frauds, especially this week. They're going into Detroit, and they're underdogs. Help me understand this. Are the Vikings for real, or are they frauds?
Yeah, I prefer the term historically interesting.
Okay, there you go.
There's never been a 10-2 team like this. They are the worst 10-2 team of all time by any stat you look at. Yeah. By DVOA, they are by far the worst 10-2 team of all time. By just if you look at points scored and allowed, they're at plus 10. There had never been a 10-2 team below plus 36 until the Vikings, and they're at plus 10. They've allowed like 750 more yards than they've actually gained. There's never been a 10-2 team that did that. Like, it's crazy. You just keep thinking they can't keep getting away with these close wins, and then they keep getting away with these close wins. But it would only be appropriate for the Vikings if this came back and bit them and they finally lost a close one in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a regression to the mean in a negative way for the Minnesota Vikings, who've come out with so many wins, sneaking out wins over the Buffalo Bills, a game I was at just a couple of weeks ago when they probably shouldn't have won the game. You know, sometimes things fall the right way for you, and then maybe indeed, Aaron, as that could happen in a negative way for the Minnesota Vikings come playoff time. Thank you so much for doing this. A treat to have you on. He is Aaron Schatz, the editor-in-chief of Football Outsiders. You can follow him on Twitter at @FO_ASchatz. Thanks for doing this, man. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too, guys.
That's Aaron Schatz. Aaron Schatz.
Shots.
Yes. Okay. Everybody, maybe that.
All Crest Fridays. Maybe we get get that song playing coming up next.
Maybe Quentin Richardson would like that song. He will join us on other side.
He was big at shots.
Yeah, draining threes.
And that's probably what I mean.
You know, draining threes, doing the whole headbanging thing with the L.A. Clippers back in the day with Darius Miles, amongst others. Big fans of Q Rich. He is going to join us on the other side. It's a back-to-back with the Raptors and the Orlando Magic, the team that Q Rich covers these days, and my FanDuel best bets as well. Keep in mind, just a half an hour remaining in first up as we will go into full World Cup mode starting at 9:30 with Brendan Dunlop and Paul Dolan taking the baton from Carlo and I. The fourth and final half hour of first up begins after this.